Let's start with a little history lesson about Lent. Lent really began in the 4th and 5th centuries as a final part of the journey of the catechumens to the Easter sacraments. So it was a kind of a spiritual time for them, and it was designed entirely around them. But it didn't take the church very long to figure out that it was good for all of us to go through that journey too, to renew ourselves. And so in any organization, whenever you have an initiation of new members, older members are encouraged to go to that initiation and kind of to be renewed by that. And so witnessing baptisms is always good for us, for our spiritual lives. So when Lent began, it was 3 weeks. And there were 3 gospel stories from the Gospel of John that were read on those 3 Sundays. It started with the woman at the well. The second one was the man born blind. And the third was the raising of Lazarus from the dead. Those were the 3 gospels of the 3 Sundays of Lent. And this year we're in cycle A. And that is the cycle out of the 3 that most follows that pattern about the catechumens. So as we go through this year of Lent, you know, let's kind of keep in mind that origin that was there. But eventually they made Lent 40 days instead of just 3 weeks. And so they added 2 more Sundays onto the front end of it. And then they determined that those 2 gospels would always be the same every year. And the first one is the temptation of Christ in the desert. We had that last Sunday. And the second Sunday is always the transfiguration. That was our gospel for today. And then on the back end of it, they added Palm Sunday, which is also called Passion Sunday because the gospel there is the Passion. And then, of course, we read the Passion again on Good Friday from a different gospel. So that is the pattern of our Lenten observance. And it's largely about journey. It's the journey of the catechumens to the altar, to the Easter sacraments, and to the font. But it's also that overarching journey that the whole human race is on toward the kingdom of God. And so in Catholic churches, the center aisle is very important. It's this journey. And when we redo this church this summer, we're going to even make that journey go all the way to the parking lot. So you'll notice in the new paving that there's a center aisle all the way up to the front door. And we're going to close the side doors and everything is going to come through the center so that from the parking lot all the way to the altar is a pathway. Because it's about the journey. And the journey we see all through the Bible. The first reading today is about Abraham's journey or the beginning of his journey. And Abraham at that time did not know the Lord, but as he begins this conversation with the Lord, he hears the Lord telling him, I want you to leave your homeland and go on a lifelong journey to the land of Canaan, a place that Abraham didn't even know where that was at that time. And he was living in Ur, which is in modern-day southern Iraq. So it's quite a distance from there to the land of Canaan, which is now present-day Israel. But Abraham embarks on that journey. And then later we see in the Exodus tradition, the Israelites leaving Egypt and going on a 40-year-long, lifelong journey through the wilderness to the land of Canaan, which is going to be Israel, their homeland. And we see Elijah traveling 40 days and 40 nights back to the mountain of God, Horeb, to regroup and to rejoin himself with his mission. And then Jesus spends 40 days in the desert solidifying his identity and his mission. And we spend 40 days in Lent journeying, identifying our union with Christ and with each other. So today we have the gospel about the transfiguration. What is it about the transfiguration that would inspire those people back in the 4th century already to determine that this gospel was important for Lent? Okay. Jesus begins his final journey to Jerusalem with this event. And what is his journey to Jerusalem? It's his journey to his death, to Calvary. And it begins with this. From this point on in the Gospels, Jesus is heading toward Jerusalem. And he knows what's coming. He knows it's going to end in his death, but he also has some inkling, even in his humanness, that it's going to end positively in some kind of resurrection, that death really ultimately has no power over him. And so he tells his disciples, just before this passage, that the Son of Man has to go up to Jerusalem to suffer at the hands of the chief priests and the elders, be put to death, and then be raised on the third day. He predicts his passion. And you might remember that Peter says, oh, we won't let that happen to you. And Jesus responds to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You're thinking like humans do, not like God. Jesus, who is God, is thinking in a very different way from humans because he understands the bigger picture of it all. And St. Paul nails it in that second reading where he says that the benefits of Christ were there before the world began, but it just became manifested in Jesus. In this timelessness of God, who isn't bound by chronological time and for whom things don't happen in neat chronological order. And so the church, innately recognizing that reality, puts the story of the transfiguration before the resurrection. In other words, God isn't bound by time. So Jesus' glory has been there since before the world began, and the glory that he experiences now beyond time in the realized kingdom is already there. But in the person of Jesus of Nazareth, it gets manifested, it gets revealed. It doesn't just happen there. Jesus didn't change anything. He just revealed it, manifested its meaning and its reality. We have the sacraments, and the sacraments, in a way, don't really change anything. They just manifest the grace that has always been there in us. And we talk about transformation, but the transformation is not something from the exterior that wasn't already there. The transformation is our inwardly realizing our gracedness, that God has always loved us, and that God has always willed our salvation if we would just come along on the journey, if we would just cooperate with that grace. So Jesus is transfigured, or is he? Nothing changes in Jesus. He just reveals the glory that was always in him. What changes is Peter, James, and John. They suddenly are given by this revelation the courage to follow Jesus to Jerusalem. They're the ones who need bolstering. They're the ones who need some courage. Jesus already has it. So the transfiguration is really happening in them and in us. The transfiguration, the transformation into divine life that has always been our destiny, we now on our journey of faith are saying yes to it. We're realizing that that destiny is ours. We're realizing that we are children of God and heirs of the kingdom. And we make that decision over and over again on that long, lifelong journey to say yes to that and to respond in kind. One of the elements of liturgy that has to be remembered is it's about union. It's about the gift of God coming to us. And it's about our recognizing that gift and responding in kind. And so we come here as the guests of Christ, who is the host. Sometimes we think we're hosting him. No, he's hosting us. We're the guests. And he gives himself on the cross forever for us. And we give ourselves back to Him. That's what salvation is. Recognizing, as St. Paul said again in that second reading, it isn't because of our works that we did, it's because of His grace and the gift that He gives to us. And our response is faith and allowing ourselves to be transformed into divine life.